Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour editorial review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabel, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest, and I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour, an editorial review, is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour, an editorial review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour, an editorial review, brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on rebuilding the waste places when we come back. You know, over the past century, we Americans who were once independent, capable, and able to manage our own financial, medical, and legal affairs have now been reduced to dependence, incompetence, incapacity. We have been made wards of powerful commercial, financial, medical, and legal corporations, cartels, and bureaucratic institutions in our modern industrial society. And we've been taught to rely upon these paid professionals like bankers to manage our financial affairs and doctors who manage and treat our health problems, and lawyers to direct our business and legal affairs instead of relying upon our own good common sense. That's why I contend that it's time that we Americans who were once able to catch our own fish learn once again how to fish instead of being fed by these paid professionals. Regaining our power of attorney is the single most important step in regaining our capacity, rights, liberties, and duties. And if you'd like to learn how to do this through courtroom strategy and procedure, why don't you write for my free general law CD package? Remember, it's educational, informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free of charge, and all you have to do is just call and ask for it. It's 417 is the number, 273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, why don't you go to our website, georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email machine and send an email request. Again, that's georgegordon.org or call direct 417-273-4967. I've been reporting on an article here written by Franklin Sanders as it relates to the wheels coming off of the American empire. I think all of us are pretty well familiar with the problems that are going on. I mean, you know, Alex Jones is telling you about them every day and reporting upon the graft and corruption that goes on. There are newsletters and guys like Bob Chapman and Franklin Sanders here with the Money Changer and on it goes. There's newsletters and hell, it gets better than that. You can read about these problems in USA Today, in the mainline press. You can see it on PBS on Now and Frontline. You know that something's not right. Maybe you're not able to put your finger right on the button and say, well, here's what's wrong, but you know that things aren't right and they're coming apart. You can see the war in Iraq's not right. The war in Afghanistan ain't going too good. We know that they're not right, but we don't know quite what's wrong with it. This war on terror, about as phony as a $3 Fed note, you know it's not quite right, but then you know, on the other hand, that, God, we've got to do something. But what? So Franklin Sanders wrote an article. He called it Rebuilding the Waste Places. It's a citation from Isaiah 61, verse 4. It says, and they shall build the old wastes, and they shall raise up the former desolations, and they shall repair the waste cities and desolations of many generations. That's Isaiah 61, verse 4. He opened by saying, and maybe I'm just getting old and cynical, but today's America leaves me stone cold disgusted. I said last time, makes me want to puke. I couldn't agree more. It's a lot of noisy people yelling at each other without actually talking to one another or doing anything constructive. Everybody knows something's wrong and that the wheels are coming off, as Peggy Noonan wrote in a recent Wall Street Journal editorial. But all their knowing and talking never changes anything. They just keep on spewing out the same old worn out rhetoric and cliches while making sure that they're getting their share before the wheels really do come off. There was a hell of an article here in... I think it was on Now, if I remember right, Now, on these earmarks. I mean, it's a story that'll blow your socks off, and it's the open bribery of members of Congress to get their votes. And they showed how CAFTA was passed by simply the president called these representatives. He said, hey, listen, just write your own check. Tell me what you want in the transportation bill, and we'll just write it in for your congressional district. And those representatives changed their votes. They're not working for what's good for or what's needed for America. They're working for and they're voting for what's going to elect me in the next election. They are, in effect, bribing you to vote for them, and they're being bribed by somebody else who's being bribed by. And I pointed out to you that this thing of taking gifts is strictly prohibited in three statutes by God Almighty himself. He told us that the gift blinds the eyes of the wise. Franklin Sanders wrote an article. He said, I've got some bitches here that I want to air, and so he put them out, and I've been commenting on them. The last one that he writes about is debt. He says, we need freedom from debt. This may sound strange to your ears, but we must once again protect our people from the usurer. The scriptures define it plainly. The borrower is the lender's slave. As long as banks can create credit by a mere bookkeeping entry and force us to pay 17, 19, or 28% a year interest, we'll be their slaves. And as long as as car title discounters and check discounters can charge 750% interest, someone will be their slaves. Just think about it. What do banks and loan sharks loan? They don't loan money, they loan credit. Nothing of substance, nothing earned, nothing real. And yet this fiction enslaves us all. Wait, wait, if you put legal limits on the rate of interest, won't there be less credit? Right, absolutely right. And less credit means less borrowing and fewer debt slaves. In other words, less theft. And in conclusion, he says, I know mine is a short list, but it's a telling one. Without achieving these reforms, the country will keep skidding down the tubes. This is not about restoring the Constitution. The Constitution is as dead as a hammer, and it's been dead for 150 years. Something new has to come, because the old cannot be fixed or reformed. We need a renovation, and it will come, and come it will as God lives. I think that's a reference to the second coming that Franklin Sanders said. Nothing's going to change this thing until the second coming. Ah, but wait a minute. Did you know that in the Bible, that crazy book, the scripture, did you know that there's a methodology for turning America around? But it doesn't have anything to do with voting. It doesn't have anything to do with me coming to you and telling you that you need to vote this way or that way, or informing you about the bribery that's going on or the earmarks. It doesn't have anything to do with that. It has something to do with you, though. It has something to do with you. And what you could personally do to turn this country around, and then I'm going to share that with you, because it's been here in the Bible for almost, longer than Moses. It was written by Abraham. Actually, Abraham didn't write this section of the scripture. It was Moses that wrote it, but it was written in Genesis chapter 18. If you get a Bible, flip over there to it. It's Genesis 18, verse 23. This is a pretty wild story. Let me give you the numbers here, because for the last, 50 years that I know of, commentators and conservatives, politicians, economists have been telling us that we've got to make some very hard choices and meaningful changes if we're going to turn America around and save the nation. I'm talking about saving the nation of America, or saving the Canada, or saving Australia. The world is going into what's known as the Great Tribulation. I don't think that the world could turn that around. Maybe. I mean, the whole world could, but it's not very likely. But we Israelites actually have the power to do that. I mean, you people in New Zealand can check out of the Great Tribulation, just your country all by yourselves, just live your lives down there. And it was laid out here by Abraham in a conversation that he had with Melchizedek, who was on his way over, by the way, to Sodom and Gomorrah. See, we had a San Francisco many, many centuries ago. So what you see going on in San Francisco, New Orleans, all of the sodomy and the perversion that's going on in America, that's not something new. Hell, that's been around for thousands of years. We used to keep it under wraps a little better than we do now. But there was a couple places named Sodom and Gomorrah, and they were kind of bad, kind of bad. And one day, Melchizedek, along with two angels, I can tell you who the two angels were. They were Gabriel and Michael. So here goes the guy that we later identified as Jesus of Nazareth. Here goes Jesus with Gabriel and Michael, and they're on their way from Jerusalem, which at that time was called Salem, and it's about 65 miles from Jerusalem to Sodom and Gomorrah. It's not even 100 miles. And I imagine they were walking. It doesn't say that they were driving in a Maserati or a Lincoln Town Car. And they came upon Abraham and where he was living. I don't know if it was his camp or whether it was his home or what it was, but they pulled into Abraham's abode. We'll call it his abode, home. And there was a great celebration. Abraham said, hey, go out and kill a fatted calf. And they sat down and they were eating meat and potatoes and drinking milk, if you can believe it. Meat and potatoes and drinking milk, just having a good time. Probably had a couple glasses of wine, maybe a cold Falstaff or a Miller Lite or something like that. And they were chit-chatting a little bit. And Abraham said, well, where are you going? And Melchizedek said, I'm on my way over to Sodom and Gomorrah. And he said, oh, well, what are you planning to do over there? And he said, well, I'm going over to nuke them. And Abe was shocked. He said, nuke them? Kill them all? Nuke them? Yeah, I'm on my way. And when I get over there, I've had some bad reports. And if what I have heard is true, I'm going to nuke them both. Now, a strange conversation develops in verse 23. This is Genesis chapter 18, verse 23. A strange conversation develops. Abraham says to the creator of the universe, can you imagine yourself sitting here, in your living room, and here he is, God Almighty himself, sitting in a living room, chit-chatting with you across the table, and maybe you've got some chips and dip out there and drinking a beer, and you say, well, where are you going? So I'm on my way to San Francisco. I'm going to nuke it along with Oakland. Well, wouldn't you be kind of shocked? Well, I'm sure that Abraham was pretty shocked. And here's what Abraham said. In verse 23, Abraham drew near, and he said, will you also destroy the righteous with the wicked? Hey, boss, are you going to kill the righteous people along with the wicked people? You're going to kill them all? And he went on to say in verse 25 or 24, he said, peradventure there be 50 righteous within the city. Will you also destroy and not spare the place for the 50 righteous that are therein? Peradventure, that means, what if there's 50 righteous people in the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah? Would you kill the righteous people along with all the bad people? Would you kill everybody in San Francisco? Or what if there was 50 righteous in San Francisco? Wouldn't you save the whole city for the sake of 50 righteous? And in verse 25, he went on to say, that be far from you to do after this manner, to slay the righteous with the wicked, and that the righteous should be as the wicked, and be far from thee, that be far from thee. Shall not the judge of all the earth do right? Notice he's talking to the judge of all the earth. And in verse 26, God answered, and he said, if I find in Sodom 50 righteous within the city, then I will spare all of the place for their sake. Listen to those words. He said, if I find 50 righteous in that city, I won't destroy the whole city. Of course, the question arises, well, how many people were living in Sodom and Gomorrah at that time? I don't know. I wasn't there. I have to rely upon historians' reports. And a historian who seems to have some weight in the matter, a guy by the name of Josephus, said that there was about 100,000 people living in Sodom and Gomorrah at this time. Well, Josephus lived about the time of Christ, so I don't think that he was there at Sodom and Gomorrah either, so I think he was relying upon historical information. But after Josephus wrote that down, many people have come along and said, oh, God, no, there wasn't 100,000. Not way back in that time. There was only 10,000. So there's some controversy as to how many people were living in Sodom and Gomorrah at the time that this event transpired. Was it 100,000? Was it 10,000? Was it 1,000? Was it 100? Was it 1 million? I don't know. I wasn't there. And it really isn't important for the purposes of our observations here, our dialogue, but I want to show you that we could save the entire American nation, 300 million people in this country, this year, 2006. By August, they tell us there's going to be 300 million of us. I'm going to tell you how to save the whole damn place. Just listen up. Now, here's the God of the universe. He says, if there's 50 righteous in that place, I won't destroy it. Now, Abraham comes back with a very strange observation. Listen to this in verse 27. Abraham answered and said, behold, now I have taken upon me to speak unto the Eternal, which am but dust and ashes. Now, look, I'm just flesh and bone, dust and ashes. I'm talking to the judge of the universe, the judge of the world. I know my place. But listen to me now as I ask this question, verse 28. Peradventure, what if there shall lack five of the 50 righteous? What if we're short five? Will you destroy the city for lack of five? And he said, if I find there 40 and five, I will not destroy it. So Abraham asks, you know, a pretty logical question. He says, well, geez, what if you're short five? Would you destroy the place if we're short five, we don't quite find 50? And it led me to ask the question of myself, why was Abraham even concerned? I mean, if God came to me and said, I'm going to nuke San Francisco and Oakland tomorrow at 10 o'clock, I wouldn't even get into a conversation. I would make arrangements to be watching CNN at 10 o'clock tomorrow. I would be sitting here waiting for the two worst cities in the nation to be destroyed on CNN live. But Abraham didn't seem to be too excited about seeing Sodom and Gomorrah destroyed. And I think I know why. So I'm just going to kind of ad lib here a little bit and tell you what I think. I think Abraham had 318 servants, and I used to be in the cattle business. In fact, I still am. I can tell you that it takes about one man to tend about 100 cows. So if I had 300 servants, I would have about 30,000 head of cattle. 30,000 head of cattle. Now, 30,000 head of cattle need approximately 900,000 acres to keep them on, you know, give or take a couple acres, about 100,000 acres of ground. So Abraham is running a pretty good size operation. Now, 30,000 cows produce about 30,000 calves. 30,000 wiener calves are worth about $500 a piece. So let's take 30,000, and let's just multiply that times 500, and that comes out to about $15 million. This guy Abraham's making about $15 million a year. You know, in today's dollar, $15 million a year. Now, people that make $15 million a year, typically, you know, he's got some overhead, he's got expenses, and you know, but he's probably netting half of that, which is about $7 million. Let's just round it off to six. You know, he's making about $5 or $6 million a year. Now, what do people that make $5 or $6 million a year do? Don't they invest those in real estate, condominium, office buildings? And Abraham is only 35 miles from downtown Sodom with a population of 100,000. I mean, we're talking about a guy, if he's got 30,000 head of cattle, it leads me to believe that he's probably serving a market that's probably a little bigger than 10,000. You know, I think that old Josephus there with 100,000 has probably got it about right. Now, you're servicing a major metropolitan area here, like kind of like Springfield, Missouri, or Boise, Idaho. And you're making $5 million a year. You probably have a couple dollars left over, two nickels to rub together. Abraham probably had many millions of dollars invested in Sodom and Gomorrah. I can assure you that if I would have been Abraham, I would have had a lot of money invested in downtown office space. in downtown Sodom. The story goes on in verse 29. He says, and he spoke unto him yet again, and he said, peradventure there shall be 40 found there. And he said, I'll not do it for the sake of 40. And he said to him, oh, let not the Lord be angry, and I will speak, peradventure there shall be 35 found there. And he said, I'll not do it for the 35. And he said, now, behold, now I've taken upon me to speak unto the Lord, peradventure there shall be 20 found there. And he said, I won't destroy it for 20 sake. And he said, oh, let not the Lord be angry, and I will speak, yet this once, peradventure, 10 shall be found there. And he said, I'll not destroy it for the sake of 10. And the Lord went away, and then as soon as he had left, communing with Abraham, and Abraham returned to his place. Now think about this for a minute. This is a God who says, I'm the same yesterday, today, and forever, and I change not. I'm the God that cannot lie. All right, now we put that together. And the guy says, I change not. I'm the same yesterday, today, and forever. I don't lie. Well, that means he's the same today in the year 2006 as he was then in the year 4000 BC. And so I'm sitting here saying to myself, aha, peradventure that today in America, we should find, oh, somewhere in the neighborhood of 30,000 righteous in the nation. Would God destroy this nation if there were 30,000 righteous? Now, if there was 100,000 people in that city, 100,000 people, then 10 out of 100,000 is only 1 out of every 10,000. Divide 10,000 into 300 million. If there were 30,000 righteous men and women in the United States of America today in 2006, the God of heaven would not destroy this nation for the sake of those 30,000. That's a city about the size of Eureka, California. All right? Now, just in case that we're wrong and that there was only 10,000 in the city, and if you were to divide that 10,000, that is 1 in 10,000, there's 1 in every 1,000, divide 1,000 into 300 million, we would need 300,000. All right. Well, 300,000 people, that's about a city the size of New Orleans, you know, the one that he just destroyed. New Orleans, I think, had 450,000 or thereabouts, but you know, it was the 23rd largest city in the country. A city of about twice the size of Springfield, Missouri. A city maybe the size of, real roughly, you know, not quite, but about the size of Boise, Idaho. A little smaller than Salt Lake City. If there were that many people in the entire nation, the God of Abraham said, I wouldn't destroy that place for that sake. Now, do you think there's that many righteous in the country? Let me tell you another little story over here as we're thinking about this. It's a fellow by the name of Elijah in a country that actually got destroyed. Ultimately, God destroyed it. It's in 1 Kings chapter 18, I believe it is. 1 Kings chapter 18. A guy by the name of Elijah. And he's having a conversation with Big Mike. Big Mike. Michael the archangel. And in the conversation, see if I got this right. No, it's 19. Chapter 19. 1 Kings chapter 19. And Elijah said, I have been, in verse 10, go to verse 10. He says, I have been very jealous for the eternal, the God of hosts. For the children of Israel have forsaken thy covenant, have thrown down thine altars, have slain thy prophets with the sword, and I, even I, only am left, and they seek my life to take it away. Now here's Elijah. Now this guy Elijah is no lightweight. He's a pretty famous prophet in ancient times. I mean, you know, he's not quite a Moses. But you know, he's a little bit ahead of Hosea and Micah. And Malachi, I mean, he's quite a little guy. He doesn't have any books written after him, but there's a lot said about him, and he was pretty famous. He's the guy, you know, that went to heaven in a chariot. I mean, that's pretty heavy duty. And he had a little complaint. He said, listen, I'm the last man in the nation to practice the law. Everybody else has thrown it out. So if you're sitting over here saying, oh my God, we've thrown the Ten Commandments out of our public schools and we've got this separation of church and state. Listen, boys and girls, this is nothing new. We Israelites, we Americans, we've been doing this with our God from the time we left Egypt. We've stuck our finger in his eye, gave him the finger, told him to kiss off. I showed you that last time. We told him, hey, listen, we want a king. We want democracy, man. Hey, we don't like you. We don't want you ruling over us. We want our own king. God said, okay, well, let's do that. Well, listen, second time in verse 14, he said the same thing. He said, I've been very jealous for the Lord God, and because the children of Israel have forsaken your covenant, forsaken the contract. Yeah, you know, boys and girls, you and I, little Georgie Gordon, and you and everybody else, Franklin Sanders, we got a contract here, boy. And we are in breach of contract. Breach of contract. Now, you know, God's no dummy. He knows that you're not going to get all 300 million people in the whole country to obey God and keep his commandments, but I think he did expect something more than 10. You know, I'm sure that he didn't expect the whole population of Sodom to be righteous, but he did expect at least 10. And when he got there, there was only 4. And one of the 4 looked back. But I'll tell you this, of the 4 who were in Sodom, he took them out and saved them alive. He protected them. Well, except the one that looked back. She got it too. But the other three got out of there alive. Now, I'm of the opinion that if you obey God and keep His commandments, you will make it. You're not going to die here in America, Canada, Australia, or New Zealand, or in Great Britain or France or Norway, Switzerland, or Sweden, or Germany. If you'll obey God and keep His commandments, He'll protect you under the terms of the contract. Remember I mentioned that contract? I told you how when the Japanese attacked Pearl Harbor, it was the kiss of death for that nation. It was all over but the shouting. On December the 7th, when those airplanes flew out of Honolulu and landed on their aircraft carriers, the die was cast for Japan. Only defeat and destruction was to come upon them from that moment on. And that's because they made a choice, and when they made the choice, there was set into motion legal obligations on the part of the Creator Himself. Now, here's a legal obligation on the part of God Himself. Now, let's see what this legal obligation is. In verse 18, here it is. Verse 18, I've got it marked in blue. It says, yet I have left me 7,000 in Israel, all the knees which have not bowed unto Baal, and every mouth which has not kissed him. Boys and girls, I don't know how many there are. But when this nation is destroyed, it will be because there are not 7,000 righteous in the country. When it happens. Now, of those that are righteous, of those that do obey God and keep His commandments, He is going to protect them just like He did Lot and his two daughters. And that's under the terms of the contract. You're entitled to that. So if you want to save your own butt, then get busy. You can do that yourself. If you want to save the entire nation, then we got to get busy. We need to persuade, and I'm going to use the big number, we need to persuade 300,000 Americans that they need to obey God and keep His commandments. I don't care if they're Catholics or Protestants or Jews or Muslims or whatever the hell they are, but we have to practice all 10 of the Ten Commandments. 300,000 of us. Now, just in case I've overextended or you know, there's not that many needed, it could be as few as 30,000, but I wouldn't take that chance. If it was me, I would shoot for the whole 300,000. In fact, it wouldn't hurt us a bit if we could get 3 million of us. I guarantee you, if 3 million Americans will practice the Ten Commandments, including the fourth, including the Sabbath day to keep it holy, if 3 million of us will practice the Sabbath day, 3 million of us will practice thou shalt not steal, start using gold and silver coin, obey God and keep His commandments, we practice these Ten Commandments, God will not destroy the United States of America for the sake of those 3 million or 300,000. Could be as few as 30,000. As few as 30. But if there's only 7,000, He'll save the whole 7,000. You can rest assured that those 7,000 are going to be protected, but God help the rest of them. Because just like the Japanese on December 7th, 1941, and when this thing comes to a head, there's going to be weeping and wailing and gnashing of teeth like there has not been since Noah's flood. And we got that right from Jesus in Matthew chapter 24. He said, there's never been a time like this. And He said, there's never going to be another time like it. And He said, it's going to exceed Noah's flood. Hang on, I got to give you a little reminder here. I have to tell you that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. And The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States and worldwide over the Internet daily. For more information about the law school and Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, go to our homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The law school or the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. And the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, history, health, economics, news, and current events 7 days a week. The law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, please call the law school at 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications used on this program, and we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that those authors or publications so endorsed or recommended are going to reciprocate. And that's because most of these authors and publications that we do cite on the Law Hour are political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint is not necessarily wholly endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review. The opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you do here on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of this network or local radio station, although they should. But for more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website. It's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or call the law school direct at 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. 4967. All right. Now, I told you the answer to the riddle. If you want to save the whole nation, forget about getting people to vote. That isn't going to cut the mustard. Americans aren't going to save themselves. Our Creator can save us from ourselves. But there's got to be some seriousness on our part. Now, I got to tell you that there's an obscure law here in the Scripture, a very obscure law. Not only don't Americans keep the Ten Commandments or practice that law, there's a little-known law called the doorpost law. Did you know that? A little obscure law called the doorpost law. Now, I want to tell you that there are some people in the country that actually practice, advocate, and promote the Ten Commandments. I'm not the only one. There's a judge down in Alabama. He used to be the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court of Alabama until he started advocating the Ten Commandments. He put the Ten Commandments into the state capitol building. Oh, my God, horror of horrors, the Ten Commandments in the state capitol. And so they took his judgeship away from him. I would predict that when this thing runs its course in the millennium, I would suspect that that judge will probably be something like the Chief Justice of the World Court. I kind of hope so. I hope that somebody of that caliber takes over that position, the Chief Justice of the World Court. It'll be something more on the order of the Holy of Holies, and I'm just kind of kidding you a little bit because I don't think that that's the way the system's going to be set up according to the Scripture. But I'm just pointing out that, you know, if we had more people like that guy, you know, a few thousand more like him. I've forgotten his name now. It was Judge somebody. It slips my mind now. You probably know who I'm talking about. But I want to tell you about this doorpost law in Deuteronomy 6:9 and Deuteronomy 11:20. Why don't you write that down? Deuteronomy, written by Moses. And in chapter 6, verse 9, we read these words. It says, 6 verse 9, he says, "And you shall write them upon the posts of your house and on your gates." Can you believe that? He's talking about here in chapter 6. You know, just start off with verse 1, you come down here. He's talking about the Ten Commandments. And when he gets down here to verse 9, he says, "You shall write these Ten Commandments on the posts of your house and on your gates." Have you ever had a preacher tell you that there was a law in the Bible that requires you, a statute that requires you to take the Ten Commandments, write them on your doorposts? Not only that, you got to write them on your gates. And so there's a guy, I don't know who this guy is, but he writes these signs called the Ten Commandments. I'm looking right at one right now. I'm going to describe it to you. It's about 2 by 3 foot. It's a great big sign. It's on plastic. And right at the very top, it's in blue and white, and at the very top, it says Ten Commandments. And then it's got commandment number 1 that says, "Thou shalt have no other gods before me." And then number 2, "You shall not make unto you any graven image." And then number 3, "You shall not take the name of the Lord your God in vain." Number 4, "Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy." Number 5, "Honor your father and mother." Number 6, "You shall not kill." Number 7, "You shall not commit adultery." Number 8, "You shall not steal." Number 9, "You shall not bear false witness against your neighbor." Number 10, "You shall not covet." Cited from Exodus 20, right there, great big sign. And I've got that sign out on my big red gate. Yeah, that's right. I've got that sign right there, out there on my big red gate when you come down my lane, when you turn in off the highway. I use it as a landmark. I say it's the gate with the Ten Commandments on it. I know it's kind of crazy, but that's the statute. Now it's repeated over here in chapter 11. I'm going to share this with you, chapter 11, verse 20. It says the same thing. It's nothing to be excited about. It says, "You shall write them upon the doorposts of your house and upon your gates." Twice in the Bible, twice. He wrote this statute twice. I think he meant that he wanted us to do that. So I did. So I have them on the doorposts of my house, and I have them on the gates that come into my farm. I'm the only man in Ozark County, Missouri, that obeys God and keeps His commandments. There's nobody else in this county that follows that law. None. Zero. Zilch. I'm it in my county. Fortunately, though, there's 3,500 counties in this country. If we could get one person in each one of those counties to do this, we would have 3,500 people. Let's see how many we're going to need in each county. 300,000 minimum divided by 3,500 is, that means that we've got to have about 85 people in every county in America. 85 people in every county in America. Let's see, that would say to me, if we rounded that off to 100, if we could get 100 people in 3,500 counties in this country to follow this law, then we could save the entire nation all by ourselves. And it doesn't require that any sodomite ever repent. He doesn't have to do jack diddly squat. But God said that He would not destroy Sodom and Gomorrah if there was 10 righteous in the city. 10. And He's the same yesterday, today, and forever. We could do it for the entire nation. I don't think it's going to happen. I'm not betting on it. I don't believe it. I would be amazed if we could do this. Turn this country around with 300,000 people that would stop breaking the law and start practicing this law. You know, stop practicing Federal Reserve notes. Stop practicing Social Security. get off the third rail of politics, you know, for instance. It ain't going to happen, but then I just wanted to tell you what the answer to the riddle was. At least that's my take on it. Over here in Deuteronomy chapter 30, verse 15 through 20, you know, this same God over here tells you that there are choices to be made in life. Choices. I've got to put on my 10-power loop here so that I can read this fine print. He says in verse 15, "See, I've set before you this day life and good, and death and evil. And that I command you this day to love the Eternal your God, to walk in his ways, to keep his commandments, his statutes, and his judgments, that you may live and multiply, and the Lord your God shall bless you in the land where you go in to possess it." Now, he told us very plainly. He says, "I've given you this law. It's a pretty good law. The law that says thou shalt not steal, use gold and silver coin, don't use Federal Reserve notes, don't practice usury and interest." And after all, this is freedom from debt, as Franklin Sanders words it. He says, "This may sound strange to your ears, but we must once again protect our people from the usurer." I want to underline that. Protect our people from the usurer. Franklin, isn't that paternalistic? It's the same complaint that Martin Luther had about the Jews. He said, "These Jews charge usury. We need to protect our people from these Jews who charge usury." Well, excuse me, in my lifetime, I've never had a Jew come up to me, stick a gun in my head, and say, "Pay me usury or I'll blow your brains out." I always lied about, phonied up a financial statement, walked into the bank, and said, "Will you please loan me this money?" No, sir, boys and girls, I do not believe for a moment that the people of America need to be protected from the usurer. If the people of America need to be protected from the usurer, then they are victims. And if they're victims, then they are not masters. And you want to remember that these are the same people that vote. I would say that people who are paying usury are incompetent people. That's number one. If they were competent, they wouldn't be paying usury. They're criminals, because if they weren't criminals, they wouldn't be paying usury. It's against the law. So evidently they're criminals and they must want to do it or they wouldn't. I'm not paying usury. I used to. I paid my share. Oh, I got to admit, I had my credit cards. I had my checking account. I borrowed my money. But I was never forced into it. Nobody ever made me do it. They enticed me. And yeah, I was a voter and I was voting for these guys too. But, you know, then one day I woke up and I said, "Hey, this is kind of stupid." I agree with you, Franklin. 750% interest. Yeah, that creates slavery. I said it before. Let me say it once more. Gold is the currency of kings, silver is the currency of gentlemen, barter is the currency of peasants, and debt is the currency of slaves. Now, you've got a nation here in America of slaves, but nobody forced them into it. They did it to themselves. And if they want to get out from under it, they can get out from under it by themselves, but they don't need to cry out to God because he already told them, "I ain't hearing it." So if you want to get out from under it, let me bring you back to the point of my dissertation, the point of my conversation. And you said, Franklin, that people are yelling at each other and they're mouthing cliches. I'm not mouthing any cliches here, and I'm not yelling at you. I'm just telling you. The Ten Commandments have a hell of a lot more merit than the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto. And people who pay the income tax are practicing the second plank to the manifesto. And people that use Federal Reserve notes, checks, and credit cards are practicing the fifth plank. People with Social Security accounts are practicing the eighth plank. People who send their children to public school practice the tenth plank. There isn't a single plank to the Communist Manifesto that you can find in the Bible. The Bible is the antithesis of the 10 planks. The 10 commandments are the exact opposite to the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto. I've pointed that out, and I teach that in my schools, and I want to keep telling you people over here that I don't think that it's a very good practice, this communism, but you don't let me get in the way of your happiness and success. God forbid that you should be coerced into practicing the Ten Commandments against your will and over your objection. In fact, God insists that you make a choice here, and that's what Deuteronomy 30 is all about. He says, "I'm going to set before you life and good and death and evil. Now choose what the hell you want to do." And you know, we Americans have made our choice. I would like to encourage you to rethink your choice. Just like God told Samuel, you go back to him and tell him, rethink this king that you want. It's a bad choice. But you know, the people thought about it, and they came back to Samuel, and they said, "Nevertheless, we'll have a king." Okay. I think Americans have already said in the 92 and 96 elections, "Nevertheless, we will have the income tax. We're not going to have a flat tax. We're not going to practice tithing." Well, okay. Fortunately, though, boys and girls, if you want to opt out, you can opt out by yourself. And, you know, if Sodom and Gomorrah wants to go that way, that's fine. God will save the three people, the three righteous guys out. You can rest assured. He goes on to say here, "But if your heart turns away so that you will not hear, but you shall be drawn away and worship other gods. You want to worship the God of the United States? You want to worship the God of Washington, Oregon, and California? You want to serve them? Well, I denounce unto you this day that you shall surely perish, and that you shall not prolong your days upon the land where you go in to possess it, over Jordan to go in to possess it. Now, you're not going to possess Tennessee very much longer. You're not going to possess New York, New Hampshire, Illinois, and Indiana much longer. The wheels are coming off. He's got a little bit more here. He says, I call heaven and earth to record this day against you, that I have set before you life and death, blessing and cursing. Therefore, choose life, that both you and your seed may live. Not only did he set a choice for us, he said, I want to tell you, choose life. You're going to like it a lot better. Well, you know, the fact that you got a right to choose now gives you your freedom, or the freedom that you're looking for. This is what we all want. We want the freedom to choose. Now, if you make the wrong choice, there's going to be consequences. If you make the right choice, there's going to be consequences. And God said, now don't come belly aching to me and whining and sniveling when you make the wrong choice. Don't come sniveling to me and cry because of the king that you voted for. One more, he says, that you may love the eternal your God, and that you may obey his voice, and that you may cleave to him, because he's your life and the length of your days, and that you may dwell in the land which the eternal your God swore unto your fathers, to Abraham, Isaac, and to Jacob, to give them. Now, we got a contract. Boys and girls, there's a contract in force here. And we have become breachers of that contract. And I think you Canadians and Australians and you Englishmen over there and New Zealanders and the rest of you Israelites in Western Europe, you're in breach of contract. And there's a day of reckoning coming. Day of reckoning. And for us Americans, it's getting closer and closer, day by day, closer and closer. 2006 is going to be a very watershed year. Now, not much is going to happen until after April the 26th. That's Passover. But boy, I'm telling you, after the Passover is over now this year, I'm of the opinion that there's going to be hell to pay. Now, let's just see if I'm anywhere near correct. No, Joshua had something to say about this also over in Joshua chapter 24, about verse 15. A question came up before Joshua, and he said, now therefore fear the Eternal and serve him in sincerity and in truth, and put away the gods which your fathers served on the other side of the flood and in Egypt, and serve you the Eternal. And if it seem evil unto you to serve the Eternal your God, choose you this day whom you're going to serve, whether the gods of your fathers, which your fathers served, that were on the other side of the flood, or the gods of the Amorites, in whose land you dwell. But as for me and my house, we will serve the Eternal. So I want to tell you that as for the Gordon clan is going to obey God and keep his commandments. Now you people can make your choice. You know, make your choice, and I hope you make the right one. And if you make the right choice, you'll obey God and keep his commandments. He'll save you out of this wheelless United States of America. And if enough of us were to do this, I mean, if we could get 300,000 people, that's about 100 people in every one of our 3,500 counties, to obey God and keep his commandments, we can save the entire nation. This has been done, by the way, a couple of times. The first opportunity to try this was with Sodom and Gomorrah. That failed. The second opportunity actually succeeded for 40 years. A young kid, a young king by the name of Josiah, he had a buddy of his, and they went down to the temple, and they brought back a copy of the law, and they read the law in the king's ears. Kid's only 18 years old. You know, just a snot-nosed, pimply-faced kid. And the kid was smart enough to say, my God, we're in breach of contract. And so he said, well, let's get this thing squared around. And so he had the power to do this. So he went out and killed a bunch of pagan prophets and straightened the country out. And God said, you know, I was thinking about destroying the nation. But he said, because of what you've done here, practiced the Passover and kept the holy days and turned this country around, he says, tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to destroy the nation, but not in your lifetime. And he didn't. The nation finally went into national captivity, but not in his lifetime. So there was an example of a success. Now, there was another success, not here in Israel, but over in Nineveh. A guy by the name of Jonah was sent over to Nineveh to take him a message, and he did. He showed up in a fish, washed up on the beach more likely. Jonah walks out, and they took him to the king, and Jonah, who didn't really want to get into the religious business, he was not a prophet. He was forced into it against his will and over his objection. But he went up to the king, and he said, well, okay, I was sent here with a message, and I want to tell you which end is up. And he told the king, and the king said, you know, I think we better straighten out. And so he did. They put on sackcloth and ashes, and he straightened out the nation, and it saved him for 40 years. It didn't last for long, but it lasted for a while. I don't think you'd save America, you know, for long, but you might do it for 30 or 40 years. There's never been a success that lasted any great period of time, like hundreds of years or thousands of years, but there's been two successes in the Bible and three opportunities. Two successes, three opportunities. And we all have the same opportunity today. You can pull the fat out of the fire for yourself individually. So, again, when you say freedom from debt, I don't want to be paternalistic. You know, if people want to borrow money from the bank, if people want to use the title to their car and pay 118% interest, which is the interest rate here in Missouri for a car title loan, hey, listen, you know, get after it. I think it's bad business. I think that it's a bad program and a bad process, but nobody is forcing these people into it. And I want to remind you, boys and girls, that we Americans have had our gold and silver coin back since 1986. So if you're not using gold and silver coin, it's because you choose not to. It's available. And if you don't know how to use it, there's a school here, and we teach people how to do that. So if you want to learn how, it isn't because you can't. It's because you don't want to. And I sure as hell don't want to force you into something that you don't want to do. Now, the last thing that Franklin said here, he said, well, as sure as God lives, he said he's going to make some changes. Yeah, you're right about that, Franklin. I couldn't agree with you more. But boy, that's going to be a traumatic experience. This isn't going to be fun. This process called the Great Tribulation that you read about in Matthew 24, Mark 13, Luke 21, which is extrapolated from Leviticus 26 and Deuteronomy 28, which is further expounded in Revelation 6, 17, and 18. This is not fun. This is not going to be funny. Nobody's going to like this. I'm not going to like it. I'm not going to be very, very enthused about getting into this Great Tribulation right up to my armpits. I'm going to get into it whether I like it or not. I can see that, but it's not going to be a fun trip. Now, to conclude, Franklin Sanders said, I've got a short list of complaints. This is what needs to be done to restore my freedom. Boys and girls, we can restore most of our freedoms by simply changing from the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto back to the 10 Commandments. The thing that made America great was the 10 Commandments, not the 10 planks. Our founding fathers put 22 principles of the 10 Commandments into our federal constitution, and we became the wealthiest, most powerful, prosperous nation on earth. Even the Roman Empire has to take a back seat to the United States of America. And it didn't come from communism. It came from the Ten Commandments. And I say, let's go back to it. I'm about out of time again. When you're having fun, time flies. We've got to leave it right here. Now, you've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law School and The Law Hour, just go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Remember, the Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, just go to our homeschooling page on the website. That's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. Well, we're about out of time. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station. Something new to talk about. So thanks for listening, and good night, friends.